the results from the poll are starting to come in, so we're able to get a little bit more of a sense of who all of you are as we talk today. And so, as Catherine mentioned, I am an associate professor in comparative human development here at the university. Our panelists are from all over the social sciences and the work that they do. And I'm going to give each of them a chance right now to just briefly introduce themselves and say a little bit about what their degree is in and the work that they are doing today. And so I guess kind of with a little bit of a wave to start, because I was going to say we can go clockwise, but I don't know if everybody's screen shows up the same way. But mine, we can start with Tanya and then figure out who will go next.
All right. I got the lucky draw. All right. As long as everybody can hear me, I'll just start right off. I'm currently working at Silver Linnet Audience Research. We are a small firm based in Chicago, around 12 people actually, and we do audience research for all sorts of arts and cultural organizations, so museums, performing arts, zoos and aquariums, and also foundations who fund the arts. And ultimately we do this research, but our mission is really focused more on how these organizations can reach new kinds of people in different ways. And so research is a really appropriate way to explore that in ways that are really participatory and fun and kind of stretch the boundaries of what I learned in my academic background, which is actually a little bit unusual, but not for the audience we have here today. My background is in Islamic archaeology, and I spent a lot of time during my degree in the Middle East working with museums, with little idea of how I'd pivot that to a career, but a hope that I would end up somewhere that would be relevant. And so I have a bit of a journey to where I've come to, but we can explore that further in additional questions. But in general, my work today involves running projects for a number of different institutions, usually like 3 to 6 projects at once. And I am creating research designs, managing projects, working very collaboratively with partners in my firm and our clients, leading workshops, analyzing results, thinking about small picture and big picture issues, and really just using research in lots of creative ways without kind of one methodology that's most prevalent. So I do qualitative and quantitative work, although my background is in anthropology more so than the quant stuff. So I'm happy to be here today.
Thank you. And we're a little slow because you have to unmute to talk. So there's a little delay going on, I think, with each of us. So I guess, Keisha, do you want to go next? That's how it looks on my screen. Okay. Clockwise.
Of course. That's a coincidence. I was actually going to jump in and volunteer. So good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone is safe and well, and I'm really grateful that we could still do this virtually. So my name is Keisha Harris. I actually obtained my PhD in the same department that Professor Keels is in comparative human development, in 2018. My background is in developmental psychology, and I conducted education and colorism research in Brazil and Colombia before taking the position at the American Institute for research, which I'll refer to from here on out as AIR. So about 6 months after I completed my doctoral degree, I began working at AIR as a researcher in their Chicago office. AIR is a social and behavioral science research organization, and it's a mid-sized nonprofit organization. We have around nearly 2,000 employees. We have offices throughout the United States and several international offices as well. The headquarters is in DC, but in Chicago, we have about 175 employees here. And so we have 3 major pillars. They're education, workforce development and health and human services, and I work on the education side of things. I'm similar to Tanya, I'm also a mixed methods researcher, but I've primarily been doing research, qualitative research at AIR. So I lead coding teams, I analyze data, I meet with stakeholders that are leaders of education organizations in the Midwest primarily. And that's pretty much a gist of it, but I can get into a bit more of my role as the panel goes on.
Thank you. So Craig, feel free to.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here today. I appreciate the chance to chat with people and answer questions. My name's Craig Kinnear. I am a research manager at Trunk Club, which is a personal styling e-commerce company. It's owned by Nordstrom. I've actually been there since just before Thanksgiving. I'm relatively recent arrival there. I finished my PhD in history, did modern U.S. history, studied that at Notre Dame, finished in 2016, and I started working in the private sector in 2015, having realized that the academic route wasn't going to be for me, and kind of started networking my way out while I was finishing up. So Trunk Club is my first job in-house at a company. I worked for a couple research consultancies before that for the last few years. And now my role here today is pretty much just to focus on who our customers, Trunk Club's customers are, what those customers care about, and then what we as a company can do to make Trunk Club better for people. So like the others, I do mixed methods. I do quantitative and qualitative research. And it sounds similar to the other two panelists that have already shared. It's kind of a variety of different types of work any given day. It could include some regular tasks related to managing our ongoing customer experience program, which is pretty survey heavy. And that's especially during the first couple weeks of the month, because we kind of try to keep track of that each month. It could mean doing focus groups to get input on something like a new campaign, like a fall or spring, styling campaign. It could involve kind of a bigger picture, elaborate qual quant hybrid study to try to help us develop a new product or offering of some kind, just kind of that really big wide open pie in the sky research. And sometimes it's just 60 to 90 minute in-depth interviews with customers that we just have come in from time to time because we have a specific question about something and just need to know what people think. It can vary pretty widely, but happy to answer any questions about any of it. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Pantelis Salamides. I can go next. I think I'm the last one. First off, thank you for having me as well. I hope everyone's safe and healthy, given the circumstances of where we're at in the world right now. So I am a UX specialist at part of a user experience team within a larger global market research firm called Ipsos. I received my bachelor's in psychology with a minor in cognitive neuroscience from Temple University in Philadelphia, and then completed MAPS through UChicago this past year. And I see there's a few social science students tuning in today, so that's awesome to see you guys here. So at Ipsos, we have a whole bunch of different kinds of UX, whether it's financial UX, automotive, we have medical UX as well. I was hired as part of the tech team. So my responsibilities are for our tech clients, and that's the projects that I am associated with. It's been a super interesting experience because ultimately the design recommendations that we give impact the designs of the next iterations of these products that I even use personally. So it's cool to see that the projects we do have this like real-time next iteration, next update to your phone kind of update. It's awesome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I was mute there for a moment. To get right into it, what I wanted to ask each of you guys to respond to is two questions. What is one aspect of your graduate school training that has easily transitioned into the work that you do now? And then what is one additional skill that you have felt that you really had to learn on the job in order to be successful in your current position? And again, just kind of raise your hand and go. And this is one for each of you to take a turn at answering.
I can start. So to begin with your first question on a skill that was easily transferable, I would say my dissertation research. So putting together my own research design and study to collect data and actually conducting the interviews, putting together qualitative interview protocols and conducting the interviews, that seemed to help me to transition pretty seamlessly to the type of qualitative work that I do at AIR currently. And so that when I began working there, I was able to start immediately hitting the ground running with someone who could contribute to developing interview protocols and someone who could train research assistants to conduct the interviews. I don't necessarily conduct some of the interviews myself, but I'm able to train more junior staff on doing things like that. So that was a valuable skill, having to do that myself as a PhD student and then being able to train junior level staff. In terms of something that I maybe had a bit more of a learning curve with, and I still am learning, is transitioning to more of a business atmosphere. So working very, very quickly and having to produce deliverables for clients, sometimes by the end of the day, sometimes by the end of the week. And so really being able to translate research into recommendations such as policy recommendations rather quickly. That's something that's taken me some time to acquire as a skill.
Thank you for that. And others, like I said, please jump in quickly, raise your hand. And
I'll jump in. it's a really good question, and it's a question that comes up a lot, I think, when anybody tries to bridge this. I mean, one of the things I think you heard pretty much all of us say is that we're all doing qual and quant work in our work here. And I mean, just the big one for me was anything quantitative. I was like very averse to numbers for, you know, my entire graduate work. I was a cultural historian who reveled in diaries and very non-quantitative anything, everything. So it was definitely an adjustment on that front. So everything numbers related. And I think we can talk more at some point in here about like how to try to ease your feet into the water on something like that, if that's where you're coming from, because there's good ways to do it, and there's the way I started doing it. And I think something that I brought with me that I didn't appreciate how useful or broadly useful of a skill it was when I was purely in my academic mode was really more of like from the teaching skill set as much as anything. If you've ever had a chance to teach, or if you've even just thinking about your time in a classroom and imagining running a classroom, if you haven't taught, the skills that go into preparing a lesson or guiding a class discussion or just any sort of kind of communication of ideas with expertise in simple and clear frameworks that make sense to your audience is something that like translates to basically every setting possible. It's just a one that I didn't realize how valuable. I just so those are the big ones. And I'll add, I guess, one more, which is that I had to learn, which is the sort of the lingo. It's almost like the business world is its own subculture. You kind of have to be an anthropologist and immerse a little bit and just kind of learn how this different culture talks and thinks. And you realize there's analogs, but you got to figure out how to translate it. Thanks.
Go next also. And Craig, I think I'd echo a lot of what you're saying. I hope we can talk more together about that relationship between qualitative and quantitative research. I think I've also learned some important lessons about how to be more marketable. You know, everybody comes from a specialty in one way or another and is not going to have all skills, but there are ways that I could kind of pivot my skills to appear more quantitative, even with my qualitative background. But one of the things I wanted to mention that really helped me make this transition was, I didn't intentionally do this, but I took some classes within my graduate career that involved group projects. And that's something that is so extremely valuable in my position, but also in, I think, a lot of our positions. There's a lot of team-based user experience work, audience research work going on. And in order to get those positions, you really need to demonstrate that you can play well with others, that you can think collaboratively. And it's sometimes hard to get that experience in graduate school where so much is dependent on your own personal projects. I got my PhD from the University of Chicago and took a class called Anthropology of Museums. I'm not sure if it's still there. If it is, that was a great class and course to try out group-based projects where small groups went to different institutions around Chicago and did different kinds of qualitative research and wrote up shared reports, presented them to the class. I actually shared my presentation from that in my first interviews as I was looking for a job. And so that was a pretty good way to show that I had at least some of those skills in practice rather than just an intention. I didn't even know I should take that course, but I'm telling you guys, I think if you can find a course like that, then you should definitely try to fit it in. And then just as Craig was saying, the lingo is so difficult, is an adjustment. I graduated in 2013. I worked in user experience at a small firm in Chicago for 3 years and then switched to audience research for museums. And so I had to think about financial language, healthcare language, all sorts of things. But even in my field, in museums, which I thought I was well-versed in, when I work with museum teams now, I'm working with market research folks, marketing folks, people who deal with funders, donations, people who deal with exhibits. All these people come from very different backgrounds, and I have to try to speak all of their languages. And that's something you just need to do research on in whatever sector that you're interested in and try to pull that language out as soon as possible as you're interviewing or pursuing any sort of career in that area. And it just changes.
I can go next. So to kind of explain one of the graduate courses, I coming into this UX role, primarily for our tech clients, I already had a love for human-computer interaction. I even took a grad course with Pedro Lopez, where it was being a coming from psychology and the social sciences. It was a really interesting course because I kind of it was more here's all the tech that's out there. Try to make it better, and it I did not necessarily need to come in with a design background, as there's a lot of confusions these days with the difference between UX research and UX design. And even some companies don't know the difference when you're doing the job search. So it was interesting to kind of pull from that coursework and that graduate class that I got to apply directly to this current role that I have, where it's all about informing design, better design practices, and pulling the user's journey out into a story that can be digestible and serve the larger whole. Something else that I've, a skill that I brought with me is kind of organization. As Tanya mentioned, we're definitely doing a lot of projects at once. So they all have a lot of moving parts. They're all in different phases of the project development. So it's important to stay organized, just like with coursework and lab work at the university. And some additional skills that I've developed is just time management. It's very interesting to be having our international partners and our teams and our trying to schedule meetings and make sure we're all having a cohesive, productive conversation throughout the entire project lifecycle when we have partners in Jakarta and a lead in San Francisco and me in Chicago. So it's really interesting to kind of make sure we're all organized and being very effective in our time management. That was something that I could only learn through hands-on experience, and it's been a really interesting ride.
Thank you very much. All of that was very, very helpful. And I guess one thing, sort of a similar question, but phrased in a slightly different way, that I'd like to ask each of you to respond to is, what about your graduate training? Did you have to sell to your employers as something that you would bring and be beneficial? And what about your graduate training was something that your employers were already looking for, and you didn't have to sell? So I think many students wonder about that question, how will they sell themselves to their employers? And so what were the things where, these are skills that you are developing in grad school that employers are already looking for, and so that those aspects aren't a challenge to sell? And what are some of the things where you do need to sell it a bit more making this type of landing this type of job that you did?
I'll volunteer.
Okay, good. I was like, I don't want to keep going first.
Unfortunately, as a historian trying to move into market research consultancy type work, the short answer is they were looking for nothing that I came out of grad school with specifically. Coming out, you know, for the audience today, right? Like coming out with a master's or a PhD, like that label is helpful. UChicago, Notre Dame, that label is helpful. Opens doors, it starts conversations. But I studied modern U.S. business history. I started out very different, but by the time I was done, I did a dissertation on 20th century U.S. business history. It's as relevant of a subject to the corporate world as you can possibly do in history. And I've had maybe two questions in 5 years about my research subject area. But what I will say on that front is, before I even started grad school, one of my advisors told me something I try to share with everybody I ever talked to along these lines, because he didn't realize how helpful it would be for people trying to find work outside of the academia. And it, what he said was, PhD more than anything else signifies that you can teach yourself anything you need to know. And I think going through a program like MAPS or MAF or something is like another very similar, I think that the analog is there. I think that there's the idea that you've learned to think, you've learned to know where to go to find information you need to learn something new. And you've been tested on these kinds of like larger challenging projects where you have to contribute something new and original. Right. And all those things are extremely valuable. It's kind of up to like the applicant coming from this background to be able to like wrangle that through your own personal experiences and training. And I'm interested to hear what other people say here in a second, because I think other people do have more direct direct like training in their graduate work than I did. I guess basically one way to think of it is like, I'm kind of the worst case scenario and it can work. You just have to be really thoughtful about the steps that you take. So in terms of what did I have to sell as beneficial, I had to sell that idea, right? I had to kind of use the fact that people were going to give me the time of day because I had this stamp from this recognized name. And with it, people will say, well, he's probably not dumb and he's probably not lazy. Let's hear what he has to say on this stuff. And that gave me a chance that someone else with the exact same credentials otherwise might not have had. And at least I get to then make my case, right?
I might be a good person to add onto that because I feel like I was in the same situation where it was a pretty hard sell to make a transition into a career outside academia with a degree in Islamic archaeology. I have an undergraduate degree in anthropology, so that anthropology is an area that's pretty relevant to audience research, but for eight or more years, I was doing history and in an area that really is not relevant to a lot of United States business. And what was helpful for me in pivoting to that was playing up on those same labels coming from an institution that it is good accreditation for students who think really deeply. But honestly, that's a label that can go both ways. Yes, if you appear smart, that can help you get one foot in the door, but it's really hard to get the other foot in the door because many corporate companies are looking for people who are personable and able to dialogue with non-academics, able to not be too smart that they're going to intimidate the clients that they're working with who may not have those similar backgrounds. So it was actually, it was just as important to, for me to show writing examples that weren't academic writing, for example, you know, something that was more of a presentation and visual or fun and quirky, did me better in interviews than showing them a formal paper. And in the same way, I tried to leverage some non-academic stuff that I was doing. I was working in a computer lab and I managed a database of movie rentals. That was something that I put on my resume because it was technological and it was quantitative. And that I actually ended up talking about that much more than I talked about Islamic history because it was relevant to the people that I wanted to work with. So trying to think creatively about all your ranges of experiences in addition to academic work worked well as a combination together for me.
Just unmuting myself. To add on that, I also believe that coming from the social sciences, we already have a lot of behavioral methodology and just things in our toolbox that we can use in several different career paths. So it's important to kind of highlight these things when you're interviewing and when you're trying to seek out these positions. For example, UX is all about insights. It's less important, coming from psychology, so it was always important to have that first 5-6 pages of your thesis that are about like the why you're doing the research, and you really focus more on proving why you would need to do what you're doing. But with UX and insights research, it's important to show yourself as someone who can pull a story out of the research you're doing in a concise way and kind of relay this to the person who is trying to hire you. It's been really interesting as I speak with, as I was on the job search to speak with UX mentors who would tell me to kind of explain why is this important, and being able to take every research experience you've had and kind of pull out that story of why this was important, how it propelled the field further. That's been super helpful.
Okay, and I'll share as well in terms of what I have had to sell and then what I didn't have to sell. So probably out of all of the organizations that we represent, AIR probably has the most overlap with academia. It's definitely not academia, but we work closely with university professors on a lot of projects. So I think it's an organization that understands academia very well. So to that regard, similar to what Craig had mentioned, the name recognition, University of Chicago, goes very far. That's not something I had to sell. Having a PhD, I didn't have to sell my ability to conduct research and to be able to design research studies. So they know that, I mean, AIR looks for type A personality people. They know that coming from UChicago and having a PhD, you can do research and you will work quickly and so on and so forth. So I think something that I had to sell and something that I really had to leverage in my cover letter and my application materials is actually two things. Articulating that I have the ability to work on multiple projects at once. And so in that regard, I would advise for students to really think critically about the different things that you're involved in, even if they're non-traditional sort of academic things, and being able to say, okay, I was leading this while I was also designing this study, while I was also a part of this and writing for this, because we're at any given time, we're working on a number of projects, maybe 3 to 6 projects at once, and they can have completely different topics. And so during my interview, a lot of the questions were around, okay, how can you manage this project, but then be sort of a completely different role on another project with a different type of client? And then also just being able to, really speak concisely. So being able to discuss the depths of research, the research you're conducting, but in a very clear and concise way that clients can understand and leverage for their own organization's needs. So I would say those are aspects that I had to creatively sell, even if I didn't really have those skills already, but in the application as well as during the interview.
Thank you, guys.
Can I actually piggyback on that real quick? There's one more thing I just thought of that is also like probably worth putting out there, related to the last comment. Like, one of the things I had to sell was actually the idea that I'm not just an egghead academic who lives in the ivory tower and can't get anything practical done. I actually had an interview a couple interviews ago, someone asked the question, if what's more important, perfect or done? And it was like they wanted to hear me say done, right? And I asked other people that had just been hired recently, like later when I was thinking about this, and no one else got that question, right? They asked the person with a PhD because they worried that the PhD would, sit and worry about the perfection, this is not, and then never get stuff done. And I think that's a terrible stereotype. I mean, like, we all know people who do it. I have that tendency from time to time, but it's a perception that's out there that you're going to encounter, right? So while on the one hand, it opens doors, on the other hand, it does create like a separate set of expectations for like what an academic is and how they function that you have to be ready to speak to. Anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Perfect or done. That is for our also our own selves in getting done with our programs and graduating. So that matters for us also. I just got a note that there's some great questions in the question and answer box that we should also think about. As I'm trying to see if I can find the question and answer box, I will say, did any of you guys participate in, oh, I found them. Okay. Did any of you guys participate in any internships during your time in grad school? And it's, so the question is, if you did, how was that helpful for you in the professional transition process? And while if anybody has any answers to that, I'm just going to be looking through the question and answer box.
I mean, MAPS is a one-year program, so it was definitely, as the fellow MAPS students probably know, there's a lot of things we have to keep up to date with our coursework, as well as just making sure we're going to complete our thesis in the year. But the summer prior to MAPS, I actually completed it was more of a certification through MIT, which was in human computer interaction for UX design, where people coming into this field as an introductory, like 2 month course where you just learn everything you need to know about this field. And I think coming from academia and roles that were like data coding with rodents or primates or being in a schizophrenia lab, there's always things you can pull out to show yourself that you're a good candidate for an applied research role. But having this HCI certificate showed them that it was one less step that they had to kind of teach me. And that was very useful in my hiring, I believe.
I'll add to that too. I didn't do any formal internships, but I did take a Coursera course in survey design. And honestly, just being able to prove that I had an exposure to quantitative methods, I was able to, you know, articulate what some types of analyses are, like regression analysis, or just be able to speak to what makes a good survey question so that you don't have double-barreled answers, and so that people pick a survey option that only has one correct choice for them personally. Those kind of things were enough to show that I could learn. And that was really what some of these folks who are looking for somebody for an entry-level position were looking for, in addition to my more core skills in qualitative research. And I should also just add to, if anybody's interested in this more cultural sector, arts and culture, museums, performing arts, it can be kind of challenging to do internships. There are so many people interested in this type of work. Internships are rarely paid. If you have an internship, there's usually somebody who's more qualified who's also looking for a particular position already when one opens up that is paid. It may actually be better to look for internships in other fields, maybe corporate work, that are doing rigorous methods there. And museums and other cultural organizations are often interested in hiring those who have experience in these other fields, and that might be a good alternative way to get back into museum work.
I'll actually piggyback on that a little bit too, because I like the internship was really critical for me. I had no like quantitative background, and there are technically some qualitative jobs that are purely qualitative. They seem to be fewer and farther between, and having some sort of quantitative competency and qualification is probably going to be relevant to getting a job, even if it's primarily qual. And I like literally hadn't opened Excel since like college. It's comical how much I had avoided numbers for so long. And So as I was realizing that I was looking to get out of academia, but was still trying to finish my dissertation, the internship situation that ended up really helping in a way that I didn't foresee, it just, you know, was a matter of like kind of finding the right alignment and finding my way in with people that were interested in similar things. Was basically Notre Dame had a like a tech company startup incubator, like UChicago's Polsky, Polsky Exchange. And one of the founders of a company there was given a presentation on campus. It was located right across the street, just came over for a lunch presentation. And I had gone to a few of these and tried to like network with some people in this incubator, and a lot of stuff fell through. But this guy was like, yeah, we're a survey company and we're really new. We don't really know what we're doing. We have no background in surveys at all. And so afterwards, I just approached and said, you know, do you need someone to run and get coffee? Because I just need some experience working with this stuff, you know, opening survey data in Excel or SPSS or something and playing around with it. And he's like, that's actually sounds great. We need someone who can synthesize and analyze and concisely like distill information. So if you'll help us do that, because at that time they were just doing these surveys and then printing out the survey results question by question, bar graph by bar graph, and giving it to their clients. And it was this like 100-page report, and their clients were like, okay, great, I have a bunch of answers to like your specific questions, but like what does it tell me about what I need to know and what do I do with it? And so there was, we kind of understood that there would be this this kind of mutual, we had these mutual needs, and he knew I didn't have a background in numbers or survey research per se, but again, like introducing myself as someone about to finish a PhD, there was like, okay, well, I have faith that he can work on stuff and figure things out, but big picture, he knows how to take a lot of information, pull it together, get it into shape, and figure out the nugget that's useful. And that was a 9-week internship. It ended up turning into a full-time position, which, you know, doesn't always happen. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But that first internship, even if I hadn't gotten a full-time position, then that's something that would have been very, very tangible to put on my resume as like proof that I've done this in a non-academic setting. And it would be where I would have all, like 9 weeks is more than enough to have your anecdotes for the next interview. And that was a huge, made a huge, huge difference. And I think the other thing I'll add is that being a startup, it was really helpful. I think it's worth talking about more at some point, but ultimately, like the fact that it was this company, when I came on full time at the end of that internship, I was the 8th full time employee. And so being able to come on when they were like just people at a table in a room made a huge difference, because there wasn't the established structure and the expected levels of expertise or experience or training at each level in the rung with different divisions and all that. It was just a couple of co-founders and some people who were working, and they had the latitude to say, yeah, sure, we'll give it a shot. And I think otherwise the entry level position for someone like me would have been pretty challenging.
I can just briefly answer your question, so we can get to the other questions. But I did hold 2 interviews. I had 2 positions prior to starting at AIR. So one, I did an internship, a summer internship between my 3rd and 4th year as a doctoral student in Chicago at a consulting firm. They were previously called the Futures Company, but they're not now called Kantar Consulting, because I was trying to explore what other options I wanted to consider if I didn't continue in academia. And then I also did a program with the Boston Consulting Group called Bridge to BCG. And so what those experiences helped me with was learning some of those skills that I had mentioned before, learning how to translate research into immediate recommendations for clients and immediate solutions they've taught me how to use like solution specific language based on research, but then also they just also built my confidence and helped me gain the experience of working in a business environment, being, you know, in an office space from 9 to 5 or however long. So I think it helped, the internships experience has helped with networking skills, just transitioning to a business atmosphere as well, and then building confidence.
Thank you guys. Very helpful. I'm gonna combine I guess one of the our old questions with one of the top questions on the question and answer board, which is if you could say a little bit about what entry level means when you say that. You know, what does entry level look like for somebody with a graduate degree in your field and in the positions that you're working with in? And then also people were asking for a little bit more on what does your day-to-day work life look like? And anybody can jump in. You're mute.
Thank you. I can add a little bit. Because I do hiring for my company, Silver Lynette. And we were just on the cusp of hiring 2 people and have had to put that on hold due to the current circumstances. But when we think of entry level, the key in arts and culture is that we're really not just multi-method, mixed method, we're multidisciplinary. So it's good news for people coming from the humanities and social sciences. We look for entry-level researchers to come on in from not just anthropology, but you know, public policy, from psychology, from museum studies, from really any direction where somebody can show that they have had some hard skills in leading interviews themselves and creating insight from those interviews about what that might mean across groups of people, that they have skills in writing, as I was saying, both kind of really in rigorous ways, but also in ways that are translatable to non-academics. And then also, honestly, in my company, because we don't specialize in one form of research, like UX research or market research, we are looking for people who are open to exploring different kinds of research. So, you know, it's more about the specific skills that people have rather than like going through a UX boot camp. It's better to be exposed to a lot of different kinds of research. But we don't hire people who haven't had some experience with Excel or SPSS. So, those kinds of keywords where you've used specific programs or tried out specific research methods are pretty key to highlight pretty high up on a resume for my company to consider hiring somebody.
Okay, I can follow up with that. So entry level and then day-to-day. So entry level for AIR varies. So we have various levels. We have research assistants, which can be individuals coming directly from undergraduate, retain the bachelor's degree. Then research associates would be the next level. Those people have master's degrees. And then researcher, which is, that's my position, someone who has a doctoral degree. Postdocs can also be researchers, but typically if a postdoc already has some type of industry experience or has been in that position for a number of years, then they would start off as a senior researcher, and above that is a principal researcher. There's some variability in there, but people don't necessarily have to come in with industry experience to have one of those positions. So usually only a senior researcher or above would need industry experience prior to. So people come into the position directly out of graduate school as long as they're able to leverage some of the components I mentioned before in the application. participation in the interview. In terms of day to day, I wouldn't say that any of my days are exactly the same. My days consist of virtual meetings like this. I usually have at least one virtual meeting every day. I don't have a single project where all of the project members are in Chicago. And so that's why we have a lot of virtual meetings. I lead a coding team, a qualitative coding team. So I work with a staff of research assistants and research associates. And so I manage them. And I also conduct outreach meetings with leaders of education organizations and school district associations in Illinois and Ohio. I'm a state liaison for an Institute of Education Sciences funded project or grant called the Regional Educational Laboratories. So in that regard, that involves a lot of face-to-face interaction. I also travel and I conduct site meetings for another project that's funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And so I'm saying all that to say that I don't have a single day that looks the same, but some weeks or months might involve extensive travel. But I'm usually holding a virtual meeting at least a few times a week.
Great. To kind of also share the day-to-day and the other part of the question, within UX, and I don't know if it's specifically for my company, the company I'm currently at, but there's a lot of on-the-job training. So a lot of the junior roles want to see that you're a good social science researcher. And then afterwards, you kind of get that UX training to be a better consultant. And as far as the day-to-day, projects usually are, there's a pretty quick turnover, which is around 6 to 8 weeks. And the day-to-day could depend on where you're at in the project's life cycle, whether that's launching the project at the start of it, where you have the kickoff calls with your clients. There's prepping, you prepare screeners, which pretty much involve the types of participants that you're trying to enlist for your study. And then there's also preparing the moderator guides, which are pretty much the verbatim guide of how the moderator or the interviewer will be speaking to the participant. And then you go into field work. And then afterwards, there's reporting where you have a window of a week or 2 weeks to kind of create this deck or this slide presentation, typically around 40 slides, just to summarize all the research that you've collected and pull out the insights, recommendations, and then you present, and then you close the project out. So the day-to-day varies tremendously, and a lot of these categories that I've spoken about just now bleed into each other. So there's no one direct linear path to these categories. So yeah.
So yeah, I'm just gonna echo what everyone else has pretty much said. I think in market research, you'll see a lot of entry level positions marked as like analyst is a common one. And so kind of any analyst, research analyst, type of a position is usually kind of in that vein. Sometimes there's a bit of that kind of, if you're PhD, if you're like, I'll speak to my experience. If you're very, very cultural, you know, very humanities PhD, there's a bit of a tricky area at first there where you are trying to thread a needle. It's very easy for people to say, oh, you have a PhD, you know, they'll never say you're overqualified. They'll just say, oh, you don't want this entry-level job. You'll be so bored. It's like, no, I do want an entry-level job. I would like to start doing this. It'd be great. I'm very happy to do whatever. But that can be, and that again, where I'll just kind of reiterate the internship at that startup that was just so helpful to get experience. if you know anybody who started a company at Polsky or anywhere, you can con them into letting you do a project for them, then have something to like be real and be on your resume, and you can be have enough time to be thorough and rigorous and learn and do all that, like then that's a good like entry level job to get you into a entry level job that will allow people to kind of take you seriously without having to try to make the case that I'm both hugely overqualified and massively underqualified because I've never worked with data. So, you know, it averages out to an analyst position, right? And it can be tricky. So thanks.
Thank you guys. Very, very helpful. So just looking through, and I guess the second most popular question is, given your experiences thus far, what are your current professional development ambitions for where you want to go in your specific careers that you've taken on?
All right, no one wants to jump in. I think mine, well, mine's, I guess I kind of have like two answers. The answer to the question as asked is, I could see, I'm interested in kind of bridging my role into doing more like strategy development stuff, some of the like long-term planning. Like my research group at Trunk Club, we're really small. We actually sit within the larger strategy team. So it's, you know, within the job, like within the company's like organization, it's a natural stepping stone, but the work itself also really lends itself to a lot of those types of questions. Like, I think one of the coolest thing about being a researcher in-house at a company like Trunk Club is that you're like in this unique position to be able to answer really critical questions that no one else in the company can answer. They have a lot of information on this, that, and the other, but there's really no one else who has their finger on the pulse of like what our customers actually care about, like what actually matters to the customers that keep the whole thing, running. So it's rare that like, a person in my role gets kind of an outsized voice when the like leaders need to like the CEO and other leaders and decision makers need to like decide something important about the company. It's just kind of, they're already kind of looking to like a customer researcher, consumer research to be able to answer some of those questions. And I think that lends itself naturally to moving into more of a kind of pure, like what's our business strategy type role. The second answer to the question is actually in 3 hours from now, I start a furlough because of all of the, so my career ambitions are just to like get back to work at some point here. So, so a little bit of both, I guess.
I realize I'm talking to myself because I'm on mute. But this is kind of a tough moment in this exact time to ask that. What are your career ambitions? It's kind of like get back into the office. It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I know that the whole world is affected by COVID right now, and this pandemic is affecting every client that we work with. So we realized the importance of safety. So a lot of our projects, a lot of our clients were having, were adapting to the circumstances, whether that's how you buy groceries, food delivery services, navigating the job search as well. So we're working on the strategic level and helping clients kind of learn how the user is adapting and kind of using technology to do social good. So that's like kind of what our one of my largest ambitions and I'm relaying this through the company as well, is that we're all trying to speak for the user and kind of help the clients adapt. But non-COVID related, also being a specialist, a UX specialist, I'm still at the kind of bottom of the totem pole within this company. There's the lead UX specialist, the senior lead UX specialist, then go to all these more senior roles. And the more experience you get, or the more time you've been working at the company and kind of showing that you can take on more responsibility, then you get promoted to other roles and more responsibilities and more projects simultaneously. So that's kind of where my career ambitions go currently, because I'm still pretty green.
In terms of my career ambitions, professional development within the organization, something that I'm currently in the process of gaining more skills in is writing proposals, RFPs specifically. That is the way that we generate business at AIR, and a major way, a key way to get promoted and to grow and develop into a higher role is to contribute to proposal writing. And it's also just a very, very valuable skill to have. And so that's something that I'm working on at the moment, just getting more experience in writing proposals and then being able to lead my own proposals and generate, partner with organizations to generate business for our own organization. And sort of separate from that, a major reason why I decided to go this route and sort of take a pause or break from academia is because I have some own education, like personal education initiatives that I'm working on with schools and school districts. And so I really wanted to learn the ins and outs of what the needs are of schools and school districts, particularly nationally, and then as well as within Chicago. And so I aspire to use the network that I'm acquiring now and the knowledge that I'm gaining now, and sort of how schools and school districts and agencies who provide resources to schools work, so that I can also produce some of those initiatives that I started to work on while I was a graduate student at UChicago.
And I can add too from my experiences. My company is pretty small, so in terms of future professional development, I think as we work with these cultural organizations, there's a lot of opportunities for being more creative in how we work. So that's one area where I'm hoping to think more towards. For example, when I came out of academia, I started a user experience job, and my qualitative research background was valued pretty highly. User experience tends to use those methods of really interpersonal connection and thinking with other people to create insight. And moving into my position working with museums and cultural organizations, market research has permeated those fields and user experience hasn't done as much. And so quantitative work was really highly valued. And suddenly I found myself kind of at the low end of the totem pole saying, hey guys, I think this could be useful too. Can we try this? Can we try that? And my company has been very supportive of that. A lot of the clients we work with, the different museums, are just starting to bring in user experience people, sometimes just on their websites, but then into their exhibition design or maybe in their education departments, bringing together more mixed mode research themselves. And so it's a really cool opportunity in the arts right now to bring more qualitative research in. And I'm trying to do that in my own work by just being more articulate about what qualitative research brings to museums and other institutions. But I think also more people are needed to fill those roles as they come into life.
Sorry, I was just reading the note regarding our, pretty much we're about at about 10 minutes left. I guess some of you spoke to this in some ways in the things that you talked about, but I want to put it very specifically, is if what were, you can either, you can reiterate what you did, but then also if there's anything else that you have to share on if your work was essentially all qualitative, what were some ways that you may have done to get some quantitative experience, and maybe things that you've seen other colleagues of that yours did, or other people who were in a very qualitative graduate program, what are a range of ideas and suggestions for ways of getting some of that quantitative experience, so that if you are, essentially all of your personal graduate work is qualitative, that when you go on the market, you can be able to show that that's a space that you are willing and able to grow in.
I'll take a stab at this first, just because it was an interesting path. I would, I think the easiest, the best thing to know, the most important thing to know is that there's nothing, in order to like get a job, you don't need to convince anyone that you know any more than like an intro to stats course. So if you can familiarize yourself with, for a number of jobs, other people on the panel might say, not in my job, you know, but at least like for like a lot of the like mainstream, like what you think of as a market research entry level type job, a lot of what I did at my last company, for example, was not really stats as much as just being able to work in Excel. And there were a couple other softwares we used that were a little more advanced, but you know, nothing that was like crazy, you know, fancy, just to be able to like know what to do with a big data set. So if you have, and not, sorry, that's, I don't mean like big data. I just mean like with a data set of, you know, 50 columns and 10,000 rows, which is small data in the scheme of things compared to what like Facebook and Google works with. And so, you know, it's just a matter of being able to like know what you're looking at in Excel, be able to make a pivot table, be able to know how to like group, like what types of variables you're working with, and if it makes sense to group them in this way or average them in that way, or it's like a lot of the basics. And just being able to do that, like I'm sure a lot of people on the panel had some sort of exercise task thing that they were given when they were interviewing. And mine for my last company was Mintel Market Research, a lot like Nielsen. And my task during the interview process was, you know, here's a download of our proprietary data. Here's a report that we put out quarterly. Like, can you update it to show that you could put together next quarter's report? And you just, it was nothing fancy. So in that sense, I just want to reassure everyone that like being able to like think through what you're working with is the most important thing. And then getting experience with the basics, just get comfortable with Excel. And that's the first one. And then in terms of stats or like numbers, from in my experience, if you can, YouTube is great. There's a lot on YouTube. There are some really great channels on like making stats accessible with videos. And it's probably meant for like elementary school or middle school kids, but they work great for me and I love them. And I think you can, the most important, machines can do all the number crunching for the kind of work I do. What's far more important is understanding what's actually happening when you do linear regression, what it actually means to have a correlation, what a t-test is actually doing. And if you can conceptually just know what those are, it's less about the math, it's less about the numbers, it's more about, it's like having that tool, the conceptual tool in your toolkit. That's all I have to say from there.
Yeah, I think, Craig, you had a really good overview of a lot of different ways that you can beef up quantitative skills in a lot of at small moments, and they all add up to appearing more of an expert. As I was thinking about my answer to this question, I actually realized, oh gosh, for us who work in the arts and cultural sector, there's actually, and who have qualitative research skills, there's actually a balance. One way you can go is to beef up your quantitative skills, but if folks are considering working in research in these kinds of institutions, you may also want to look into your own background working around equity and accessibility. I think a lot of arts and cultural institutions as public repositories feel a real responsibility to be more relevant to a broader swath of the public. And it shouldn't just be white affluent people. It should include communities of color, people with disabilities, thinking more about what that actually means requires bringing in people who have thought deeply and empathetically with different kinds of communities. So a lot of academic work is doing that kind of thing, and people have their own unique backgrounds. That's something you can leverage in combination with your core expertise in qualitative skills and quantitative skills to be even more of a potential job candidate within the arts and cultural realm. Honestly, in my company, I think that we would probably be more likely to hire somebody with a really deep understanding of and empathy with different kinds of communities that in the United States than maybe somebody who has, you know, beefed up their quantitative skills, which I think is kind of, it just depends on what sector you're in. But there's a lot of arts and cultural institutions who do need researchers.
So I wanted to speak to, in terms of getting the experience, quantitative experience, once you are in the position, but also just that surprisingly at AIR, there are a lot more quantitative researchers. So qualitative researchers are a great asset. And when the position announcement's out, they like AIR, we will specifically ask for a quantitative researcher or specifically ask for a qualitative researcher. So I would actually emphasize beefing up the skills that you already have in qualitative research and being able to speak strongly to those, because it is seen as an area of need at AIR. But another thing is just demonstrating in the cover letter and the interview that you are very eager to learn other methodologies, because once we have a number of resource groups within the organization. I'm actually a part of one now. I'm learning how to use R because I had experience in SPSS and STATA. I didn't have any experience at R. And so with my colleagues, we're all coming in with a different level of experience with R. Some of us, like myself, don't have any. And then some of us are already doing projects with big data. And so we come together and we have weekly meetings and we discuss. We go through a book that we're all using, and this is completely free. And the only reason I was even invited to this resource group is because I expressed an interest in wanting to get more quantitative experience at AIR. So there are ways to get the quantitative experience once you do become a part of the organization, as long as you are willing to speak up and express eagerness to learn more.
Just like quickly, I think my journey was kind of different. I came from more of a quantitative background with a lot of psych-related data coding roles. And then I kind of had to cater myself through Ipsos and this UX position as a qualitative researcher. So it's been really useful whether I'm managing a recruitment using pivot tables to kind of see if we're meeting the quotas for the right number of participants and what their demographics are, everything. And sprinkling a graph in a presentation always makes the client happy. So it's been useful to throw in my quantitative skills as well. Thanks.
Much at the end of our time. So basically, any final comments that you would like to, I guess, any final word of encouragement or risk that somebody should take in trying something new or considering as they're thinking about taking on the possibility of going into a more corporate or nonprofit or outside academia research position.
Sure, I'll share. Informational calls are very helpful. Just want to put a plug in there. Doesn't have to be because you want to interview with this organization or you saw a position that you're interested in, but I found having informational chats with people very, very useful in just trying to navigate what sort of space I may want to transition into after academia. So I highly encourage folks to try to hold those.
And I'll just say it takes time. You're training in one thing and you're planning to move into something else, and that inevitably takes time, but like, you can do it. Academia is categorically harder just as academia than any of this. So stick it out.
My final note is pretty much be the best advocate for yourself. There are so many, just ask questions, informational interviews. Don't be afraid to LinkedIn message anyone about their current position and just trying to get as much information, and take advantage of the workshops that City of Chicago, well, not during COVID, but usually there are so many workshops where you kind of have this coffee hour afterwards where you can speak with professionals who are so eager to help young researchers transition into applied research. So keep advocating for yourself.
I'd say the same thing. I think we're all, informational interviews are just such a wonderful way to continue the work that somebody does as an academic, where we're just talking to people, and there are so many professionals who are willing to do that. So have at it.
So thank you all very much for joining and participating. I don't know if we're still in. Oh yeah, I guess people are still in. Thanks to everybody for participating on the panel and our participants for listening. I hope some of the information has been helpful for all of you. And I think that's it. Catherine, are you saying anything at the end of this or? No.
Nope, that was it. Thank you all so much. It's very much appreciated.
Great. Thank you guys so much.
Everyone.
Everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.